Ruth Beltran and friends bringing you the ruthless truth. Stay tuned.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 Bradenton. The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. These opinions or views do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, Fogartyville, our staff, or volunteers. Get up, stand up.
Hello and welcome to The Ruthless Truth. I'm Comrade Matthew, and joining us today is Comrade Faraz. Welcome, Faraz.
Hey, everyone.
This episode, we're going to discuss Black August, in which we discover the meaning of study, fast, train, and fight to commemorate this month. But first, some true updates. There was a huge step forward for the Dump Duke campaign as the motion for feasibility study passes through the Tampa Council by a vote of 5-3. This is a major sign that people are taking power back and public-owned utility is the future. Kilmar Abrego has also been detained again as the high-spirited man refused to self-deport under the oppressive Trump regime that suggested sending him to Uganda this time. Dictatorship is knocking at our doors as Washington, D.C. sees its police federally taken over, igniting the question, which city is next? Israel continues to murder families and journalists at large. And finally, let's celebrate a small but important victory. A federal judge has ordered a shutdown of the Everglades concentration camp detention facility. A great win for not only the Miccosukee tribe, but for humanity itself and all Florida. Our main topic today, without further ado, is in honor of Black August. Let's learn the history and struggle with our comrade and fellow community organizer, Faraz. Welcome, Faraz, once again.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me on, Matt.
Yeah, it's been a great pleasure. I don't imagine that most of our listeners are all that familiar with Black August. I was wondering if you could just lay us a little bit of groundwork. What is Black August? When was it established? Give us some background, please.
Yeah, I'd love to. So Black August, according to Willie Sundiata Tate of the San Quentin Six, Black August is a time to embrace the principles of unity, self-sacrifice, political education, physical training, and resistance. This is a time not of holiday, but a time to educate people about the honor and history of the actions and continued resistance of Black peoples to oppression, colonization, and slavery, not only in the United States, but throughout the diaspora. And it was originally recognized in California prisons in 1979, and it's historically rooted to Black resistance, specifically in those prisons.
Well, that's fascinating. Can you tell any more about Willie Sundiata Tate or the San Quentin Six by chance?
The San Quentin Six were six political prisoners who were assassinated in the San Quentin riot in 1971, I believe. I will have to look this up a little bit to get the exact number. But he was assassinated along with five other political prisoners in the San Quentin Six.
Wow, thank you for that context, Faraz. Can you discuss a little bit more about the principles of Black August and what they mean?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, like I was kind of building on, you know, Black August is a time of unity and self-sacrifice and political education, right? And the core principles of Black August are to study, fast, train, and fight, right? Black August is not a time of celebration, but a time of self-sacrifice to benefit the continued struggle of Black and colored peoples against their oppression and repression in society by police and white supremacy. It is common practice in Black August for people to fast from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., drinking only water during this time, or for the very few dedicated, only drinking water after 6 p.m., consuming only one meal after they break their fast. If possible, always breaking fast with another brother or comrade who is also fasting, working out together if possible regularly throughout the entire month of Black August, dedicating time to study by not consuming any corporate radio or TV, and disciplining yourself and themselves from making unnecessary purchases at corporate stores, with the exception, of course, of anything medicinal or health-related that is important for your health. This is what is meant also by fasting, not only fasting from food, but from fasting from consumption. This is the time to dedicate only for bettering oneself in the name of continued struggle and the respect and honor of those who were lost in the California prisons in the civil rights era.
My goodness, that does sound like, almost as if they are reproducing the prison-like conditions outside as a matter of discipline. So what are the current day demands of those people who are observing Black August?
Yeah, so today, those who recognize Black August are still fighting for the freedom of political prisoners who have been locked up for life with no chance of parole, many of whom from a very young age. Mumia Abu-Jamal has been locked up mostly solitary confinement since 1981, and he was 27 when he was first thrown in prison, making him not, 71 years old. He's still in prison despite the call of national leaders from around the world who call for his release. These are people in our recent history, our political prisoners in our recent history of the fight for civil rights who are still alive in jail today in their old age. We demand that these prisoners are released.
This is maybe the first time some of our listeners have heard of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Are there other famous political prisoners that you might be able to mention?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say most of them are dead now, but there are, at least from the civil rights era, some of the more famous ones are people like George Jackson, W.L. Nolan, James McClain, Katari Golden, Matulu Shakur, who was recently released. Asada Shakur even was a political prisoner before she escaped to Cuba. And some political prisoners who are still incarcerated today that are still alive are Mumia Abu-Jamal and Ruchel McGee.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, Leonard Peltier as well, who was recently released.
Yes, that is correct. Leonard Peltier is also one of the more well-known political prisoners who was famously just recently released, a member of the American Indian Movement.
Common Frost, is imprisoning political activists and opposition a threat to democracy? Like, does that endanger people's ability to participate in American society?
Absolutely, without a doubt. Imprisoning political activists is, by definition, a threat to democracy. The state has an active interest in repressing voices that speak out against the power balance of the state, right? When communities come together and organize in order to challenge the balance of power in our society, they are met with repression from the police and the state. These people are being repressed and assassinated by the police for fighting to have the ability to have a say in society, in their lives, in everyday conditions. To be able to have self-determination instead of rule by, a white system. And to repress and assassinate these voices is not only a threat to democracy, but it's a straight up reveals that there is no such thing as democracy. And we've seen more modern examples of this with like Mahmoud Khalil, the Palestinian activist who was imprisoned in Louisiana for organizing Columbia students to protest their school's funding in relations with Israel.
That's fascinating. Could you talk about a little why these political activists and opposition party members may be imprisoned in the first place? Are they sent away on trumped up charges or?
Absolutely. Absolutely. These are charges that are definitely exacerbated in hope to put these people away for a long time so that they're not a threat again to the dynamic of power in society, right? These are people who, you know, more often than not have entire cases manufactured with, you know, the entire purpose of deliberately putting them away without much of a crime being committed at all.
If my brief reading on the subject material serves me well, then I seem to recall, like, George Jackson's sentencing was anywhere from 1 year to life. And so what was someone like, say, George Jackson charged with? If I recall correctly from my very brief reading, he was sentenced from 1 year to life for, I cannot remember the charge. What was that?
He was allegedly charged with robbing a gas station for $70.
My goodness. 1 year to life. That is outrageous. And with the demand to release Mumia Abu-Jamal, what has the state charged him with?
Mumia Abu-Jamal was charged with the murder of a police officer, I believe. I think one of multiple charges. But the truth, you know, the people who support, you know, his release, it's not really known exactly what happened that night, but what is known was that Mumia was shot and wounded on the scene by an officer, and he was beaten on the way to the hospital by police officers.
Brutal. How did the case of Mumia, a revolutionary journalist, and did you mention he was a Black Panther Party member?
Mumia was a Black Panther Party member, but only for a very brief time, from the ages of 14 to 16, he shifted his work mostly to support Philadelphia's Radical Move organization, and, you know, became an award-winning radio journalist, some calling him the voice of the voiceless.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. Well, how does his imprisonment exemplify the state's ongoing repression against Black revolutionaries and dissident voices?
So, reporting on racist politicians and police earns you many threats. And in the case of Mumia Jamal, it was no different. And so he had earned many politicians, Democratic and Republican Party, calling for his death and incarceration long before he was arrested at age 27. He's been denied every bid for parole. And, you know, this kind of system that treats, journalists this way clearly is showing no interest in fairness or justice. When you lock away journalists and people who are using their freedom of speech to highlight the discrepancies and racism in our society, you are quickly made into a target, because you are challenging the balance of power and you are threatening the current established system, right? And that is a very clear attack on dissident voices, on the freedom of speech, on any sort of civil liberty that, you know, we believe we may have.
Yeah, I do not want to detract from the struggle that Black August commemorates, but I see, without trying, a lot of similarity between the ongoing struggle for Palestinian liberation as well, especially regards what you've just said about journalism and the truth, reporting the truth.
It's very, you know, as a Palestinian, you know, this is what I'm met with every day, right? We get to see the assassination of journalists in Gaza on a day-to-day basis. You know, Anas al-Sharif, most recent notable journalist. I think there's officially no remaining Al Jazeera journalists in Gaza. They were all assassinated by Israel. These are people who are documenting the genocide, documenting the atrocities and the apartheid, and they're an enemy of the state because they are showing a light in the dark where the powers that be do not want a light to be shined. And for them, the easiest solution is to assassinate rather than imprison. It's just cheaper in the long run.
My goodness, that is a horrific analysis, but I cannot disagree with that. I wonder if, because the prison system seems to swallow a lot of the working class and repressed populations, like, is prison reform like an important part of the liberation struggle?
Absolutely. It is. It has to be one of the core cornerstones of the struggle for Black resistance and liberation of all minority peoples in this country. Prison reform is so important because, particularly it's so important in the fight for Black liberation because Black men are disproportionately imprisoned and on average have a much longer sentence than white men when compared for the same crimes. This happens because the system is designed by white people that allows them to take advantage and have privilege in society that is not shared with Black people and other people of color. To allow for true equality in society today would shift the balance of power out of the hands of white people and threaten their power, influence, wealth, status in society. These Black prisoners are not business owners. These are not capitalist class people. These are working class, low income members of society that are being enslaved and exploited for their labor in the same way that their ancestors have been through chattel slavery, and for centuries.
Yes. What was that? The 13th Amendment, which on the one hand abolished slavery and on the other hand institutionalized it through our prison labor system.
Yep. Yeah. Same one.
I don't know the exact rates, but these men and women who are sent to our fine prison institutions in the United States are a poor lone labor force. They work in fields and factories producing all manner of items, many of which we use every single day, for pennies on the dollar by comparison to the average walking free Joe working man.
Absolutely. We are so systematically stealing their labor and to produce goods that are sold by private corporation. What is that but slavery?
Well, you talk about how the discussion of the truth as a journalist is enough to get you locked up. I mean, what is preventing the state from simply deciding that our speech at large is something worthy of criminalization? Like, really aren't all Americans like just on the verge of being locked up for having the wrong opinion? Too loud?
Yeah. I would say that the line does not stop with Black people. It's only that we see that people of color and Black people are the people who speak up first because they're the ones who are at risk all the time.
Let's touch again on Mumia Abu-Jabal. What does his continued incarceration as a living symbol of this resistance and a victim of apparently blatant capitalist and racial prejudice reveal about the nature of justice here in the Imperial Court, here in America, I should say?
Yeah, yes, of course. Although there is a lot to say about the continued resistance of Black August outside of the United States, the continued incarceration of Comrade Mumia is a tell-all sign that there is no such thing as true justice in the United States of America. There is no fair treatment under the current system of law, and imprisoning journalists again is something that you do when you are afraid of what they will say on their reports. You are afraid of what they will reveal about your actions. The people are entitled to their freedom of speech as outlined in the Constitution. This is a constitutional right of this racist country. However, we still cannot even uphold this in all equality because it doesn't matter if everybody has freedom of speech. The only people it matters to are the supremacist majority of society, the white people who are making the system and upholding it, you know, Democrats and Republicans, and, you know, let's be clear, we're talking about the capitalist business class white people who are the actual influential white people. These are the ones who have the vested interest in keeping justice within their control. They control what is allowed and what is not allowed in society, depending on if it benefits them or not. And the violation of these rights is without a doubt an attack on justice and the civil rights of Black and colored people across the country.
Oh, fascinating. Now, we're coming up on time, Comrade Barras. There's two questions left, and I want to give you plenty of time to answer them as you wish. I'm going to skip ahead here to the last. There's a form of fight back that seems to honor Black August annually. How do you think that we in our communities can best observe it?
So the way to honor Black August, as they did in the San Quentin prison and in California prisons and all prisons across the United States, really since the 70s, late 70s, is to join with your members of your community. This is a time of study, fast, training, fighting. It is possible, if it is possible, do these activities with your fellow comrades, brothers, sisters. Learn about the history of the struggle with the position and learn about the position of struggle today. And with that being said, you know, the PSL is going to be hosting an event this coming Saturday, shameless plug, from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Betty J. Johnson Library in Sarasota. This is going to be a forum, a public study on the history of Black August with public speakers, notable well-known public speakers such as the current president of the Manatee NAACP, Tracy Washington, who will be speaking on police brutality in Manatee and the systemic racism within the police department. And it's going to be a great event and a great opportunity to brush shoulders with your members of your community who share similar ideas and are looking to organize and develop themselves. This is, you know, a continued struggle against white supremacy. It is not done. And we need to commemorate those who are still in prison today, still in prison into their late 70s with no bid for parole on basically grounds, a cruel and unusual punishment that is no longer even, doled anymore. So, come out, come and join, honor Black August and learn what it's about. I know it's going to be the last day of August, but it's never too late to engage in struggle against, the system that takes the power away from the people.
Yeah, quite right. Yeah. Complete miscarriage of justice. Yeah. Please reach out to your community, all of you listeners. And, Comrade Barras, I want to give you as much time as you can to go on about this last, question I have for you. With such a rich history of Black resistance, how have you noticed the struggles evolved and changed, within the context of Black August since the 70s? That's 50 years of Black liberation history you can talk about there.
I'm going to do my best to answer this one. It's going to be kind of a rough answer here, but Black history easily is one of the most complex histories in the entire world. We have a rich history of Black resistance, not only in the United States, but outside the United States, with Haiti, of course, being the first Black republic in the world, following their revolution against the French colonizers. We have a history of Black resistance within the United States that, you know, had begun since the first slaves arrived on slave ships. You know, they didn't arrive peacefully. These are, you know, slaves, Black people who arrived on these ships who were constantly revolting and burning the ships down on the way and taking control. And so there was never a silent moment in the struggle for Black resistance, and that very much continues to be the case today. We cannot allow the movement to be silent. We cannot allow the flame to ever go out. This is a struggle that evolves in the way that it is fought, but it is fighting for the same thing ultimately, which is the liberation and freedom of black peoples across the world, honestly, from white supremacy, not only in the United States.
Well said, Peros. Well, folks, that was our Black August episode for today. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to leave you with Next in Neighborhood. If you enjoyed learning about Black August, come join us in honoring it at the Betty J. Johnson Library in Sarasota on Saturday, August 30th at 1 p.m. Meet local organizers, partake in a trivia game, and form a community over snacks. You may also join us at the Allendale Church in St. Petersburg for the 287G Fight Back kickoff event on September 6th at 2 p.m. To stay in the know, learn more about our shows, or share your thoughts with us, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Ruthless Truth Radio, all one word. Listen to our shows at any podcast platform. Thank you for listening to WSLR on 96.5, and please consider becoming a member of WSLR if you like the programming you heard today.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the Port from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Arm, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
The Florida Rapid Response Alliance for Immigrant Safety and Empowerment offers a free hotline available 24/7 for immigrants and families facing enforcement actions. The hotline connects callers in English, Spanish, Haitian Creole, and Portuguese with observers and attorneys to safeguard their rights. The number is 888-600-5762. That number again is 888-600-5762. For more information, you can also visit theaclu.org.
This is Stephanie Wells, Executive Director of Pacifica Foundation. Congress has defunded public media, threatening the survival of television and radio stations that provide trusted news, emergency alerts, and vital community connection. Years of corporate media consolidation and deregulation have taken media out of community hands, while social media platforms cut back on fact-checking, leaving communities vulnerable to misinformation. In this time of social crisis and climate emergencies, local stations provide vital information for